Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Hey, I'm Shauna Compton-Game. This is Millennium Money. And today for Lifestyle Thursday, we sat down with singer and songwriter Matthew Mayfield. And to kick off this Lifestyle Thursday, we're giving away two of Matthew's CDs, Recoil. So head on over to http://bit.ly/Matthew Mayfield. I'll make sure and have the link in the show notes. So I hope you enjoy checking out this new, fresh singer.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Millennial Money Lifestyle Thursday. And this week we sat down with Americana singer-songwriter Matthew Mayfield. We spoke with this talented singer about his latest album, Recoil, which is climbing the iTunes singer-songwriter charts and has over 100,000 downloads on Spotify. Hope you enjoy our conversation as Mayfield opened up about how he poured all his emotions from a breakup into his new record, the attitude of rock and roll, and his loyalty to the Alabama Crimson Tide. So I listened to your music preparing for this interview, and I hear a lot of different elements in your songs. For those who don't know, describe your sound and how you perceive your music.
Well, you kind of have to put it as a musical bipolar disorder. I tend to go one way or the other. So there's a lot of stuff when I was growing up as a kid. My dad used to play, the Beatles and Neil Young and a bunch of folky stuff as a kid on acoustic guitar. He played around the house. And then I got the bug for Guns N' Roses. Was actually the first band that I got into. It was a full-on rock band. And then, I started learning about Zeppelin and Aerosmith. And so I'm kind of a hybrid of the two. If I was going to describe to anybody, I'd say it would be, if it's just me, the guitar, then it's folk rock. But if it's me and a band, then it's rock and roll,
Right, right. For many of your songs, you have a real epic quality to your lyrics and the rhythms, and you have a real great achy voice. Is that intentional to have like epic lyrics, or does that just happen organically?
Yeah, it really does. It happens organically. You know, I mean, this, especially this record, the new one, Recoil. You know, it's the first time I've ever experienced writer's block. You know, so I'd never had that in, you know, 12 years writing songs. And but I'd gone through a really rough patch with the breakup situation, and so, you know, I pick up the guitar and it felt like a brick, you know, felt like just a cement block, you know. And and then once the song started spilling out, you know, they just started to come, I mean, you know, tenfold, man. I mean, I wrote the whole record in like 3 or 4 weeks alone, you know, which that never happens. You know, usually they're like a compilation of songs that I've written, you know, over the last year, maybe 2 years. But this one was literally, you know, 2 to 3 months max, you know, from written to recorded. So that was pretty cool, man. It was a nice experience and super cathartic, you know, really, really helped me get through what I needed to, you know, screaming in the microphone, you know.
right. That is a good outlet for a breakup.
It helps. It definitely helps.
Well, besides the breakup, what was kind of your mindset? Did you kind of then just focus on certain areas and certain feelings and stuff for this album?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not really as all over the place as the records before. Mm-hmm. But I think that you know, it's a unit. You know, everything on that record is real. And even the love songs, you know, Raw Diamond Ring, which is the next single, Indigo, which is a pretty uplifting song about, you know, if there's a theme throughout the record, it's grief, you know, but grief doesn't always have to be bad. It doesn't always have to be sad. You know, there's a lot of things to be hopeful. And for me, you know, I kept a couple of love songs because even though they don't mean anything to me now, they mean a lot to other people, you know, people that are getting married, people that are, you know, in that space, in that headspace. So I'm honored to be a part of their story. And I'm thankful for the people that come up to me and say, hey, you know, this song, you know, was my first dance, my wedding, or, you know, this song was, you know, my anthem with my girl or my guy. It's like, thank you, you know. It's not mine anymore. It's yours.
Right. You know? Right. Well, I mean, obviously with this last album, you obviously had a different inspiration, and it's kind of a contrast to your last album, Wild Eyes. Are you always striving to do something a little different and kind of evolve as an artist as well?
Absolutely, man. Yeah. I always want to change. And, you know, I think, you know, as an artist, it gets really boring to make the same record over and over. You know, there's so many people that want you to make the same record over and over and want, you know, their favorite artist to make the same record so they can hear that same sound. But, you know, as an artist, you get bored.
Right.
You know, I don't want to explore the same sonic territory as I did on the last record. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to do it right and do it justice. You know, the thing is that, you know, it's just as, you know, expensive now as it was, you know, 10 years ago to make a record,
right.
make it right, you know, do it right. But, you know, people are streaming and, you know, it's done for free in a way. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, I appreciate anybody who buys a ticket to the show or spends their hard-earned money on a t-shirt or whatever, you know. It's a different world now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Well, you mentioned some of the deeper issues you have on the Recoil album, your latest album. Can you talk a little bit more about those subjects and why were they important to kind of put into this album?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's deeply personal record. I made a record in 2012 called A Banquet for Ghosts, mm-hmm. and that's been sort of a fan favorite. You know, it's one of those records that just was super special and so many people, you know, got into. I think this one is very similar in a way, but it seems to trump that one just because I'm a better writer than I was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, and it's, you know, there are songs on there that are a little darker and a little more terrifying. Mm-hmm. Even when I hear them back, you know, it scared the shit out of me, you know. But they're honest, you know. And then there's the ones that are a little lighter, you know, a little lighter than anything I did on that other record. And I'm proud of the whole thing. I think the process of, you know, and you like God's Fault, which is sort of the centerpiece of the whole record. Mm-hmm. That song is, you know, that one and Turncoat, a couple other ones sort of define the record. And Recoil, you know, the title being, you know, the backlash mm-hmm. of a shotgun when you shoot it, you know, it's, mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's no joke, mm-hmm. you know, and none of the songs, you know, you're not trying to take yourself too seriously, but at the same time, you know, you want to give everybody a piece of your heart, mm-hmm. you know, and then once you give them your heart, you'd be so surprised because those people come back and they say, oh my God, you know, like you just told me my life story or my story of my relationship in 3.5 minutes, and that, you know, there's no better prize as a songwriter than that, you know.
Right. I was actually going to ask you about that title or that track on there, God's Fault. Tell me a little bit more about that song and how did you come about that one?
Well, God's Fault was the first song that I wrote for the record, which is weird. I had that chorus laying around for a while, but I didn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. I just liked the words and I liked the melody, and then the verses sort of filled themselves mm-hmm. in. So, you know, you've got it's one of the songs where, you know, the first verse is first person, you know, so it's me, you know, narrating that piece of it, which is, you know, in the shoes of the betrayer. And then the second verse and pre-chorus, you know, you flip it, you know, so it's, you flip it on to the betrayer mm-hmm. And then the bridge, you know, as bed as a cage and now I have to lie in the one that you made, you know, that's just me. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get three perspectives with them. I guess a 4.5-5 minute song. And, you know, I really, you know, I feel like that song is so much of my heart went into that and into the song as well as the video. The video is my favorite that I've ever done. Really happy with the director and the people that work with me on that video because they captured that mood, you know, and it's really hard to do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, especially if you pour your heart into a song like that, and you don't want to, you know, a video of you just standing there singing or something like that.
Yeah, no, you can't have that. You know, I want it to be, you know, the imagery of everything that I was experiencing, and the only part that I sang was the bridge, you know, in the video. And I don't like doing videos very much, but you know, you have to.
Right.
But I didn't want to be in it very much, but the director, producers were real adamant about me being in it, but I told him, you know, I just don't want to sing, you know, I'd rather just, I can be in it and be in that moment, but, you know, when that bridge rolls around, I'll sing it. That's all I want to sing. That's all it's worth saying, you know.
Yeah. What was your path to becoming a singer? How did you decide to go into music?
Well, I started playing guitar at a really young age, about 9 years old, and I snapped my tibia and fibia, both leg bones, playing football. You know, I grew up in Alabama, so football is religion down here.
Exactly.
And as everybody knows, and I'm still an Alabama fan. But I, so I snapped those bones, and I had a cast from my top of my thigh all the way down to my ankle. So all I could do was just listen in a Walkman, you know, which you might have to explain to a younger generation. That it's a device that handles a cassette tape, and you put that in your ears, and then, you know, when you want to rewind, you got to hit the rewind on the tape. And so I learned a lot about myself and about how to be a guitar player. And so when I was a kid, you know, I listened to, you know, Slash was a huge influence, Joe Perry, Jimmy Page, Eric Clapton, you know, all those guys, Hendrix, all those guys were my heroes, you know. So I grew up wanting to be the best guitar player in the world. But then when you grow up a little bit, you know, even when I was 13, 14, you realize that there's always going to be somebody better than you, you know, as a guitar player. You're not going to be, you know, Johnny Guitar. You know,
right.
you got to put your own stamp on it. So that's when I started to write songs and to sing. You know, I didn't start singing. I was in bands for forever, and I would write the songs and write the melodies and then make somebody else sing them, you know, because I didn't think I had a voice.
Yeah.
But when, I don't know, 17 or 18 rolled around, that's when I said, well, then I have to have a voice. You know, I got no choice.
Right, right. I read on your website a quote from you about, speaking of like your rock and roll heroes and stuff like that, that rock and roll isn't a sound, it's an attitude. Can you talk about that quote a little bit and your feelings behind that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, rock and roll is, it's mysterious and it's dangerous, you know. The proper rock and roll bands, I mean, nowadays, you know, proper rock and roll doesn't exist, you know, and I'm not that old, you know, and it makes me sound old, but I'm not, you know. Johnny Cash, you know, he wasn't quote unquote rock and roll, but he's one of the most rock and roll people you ever meet, you know. And same with Lemmy from Motorhead, you know, learned a lot from him. I learned a lot from, Guns. I learned a lot from Nirvana. I learned a lot from even the late era, you know, late 90s, you know, rock and rollers, people that were, it still had an appreciation for what it means to be rock and roll. Mm-hmm. Because you can have a guy with an acoustic guitar, you know, just one guy. Mm-hmm. And it can be the most rock and roll thing you've ever heard, because it is. It's not a sound. It's an attitude. You know, some of my best friends, you know, David Ramirez is a good example. You know, he's one of my good friends. He's rock and roll as they come. You know, he's never written a rock song in his life. You know, it's not about the sound, you know. It's, for me, it's about the attitude, and it's about the, you know, you're never going to cater to someone else's desires or wants, or, you know, I'm never going to cater to someone else's version of what they want me to be. I'm always just going to be me, take it or leave it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there are probably plenty of artists that have never picked up a guitar, and they may be, the only thing they've ever done is play a keyboard through a drum machine, you know. But they may be rock and roll, you know.
Right, right.
And good for them.
How was growing up in Alabama? How did that shape your singing at all?
Yeah, it did, you know. You know, Lynyrd Skynyrd and, you know, so many Southern rock bands were sort of always shoved down my throat as a kid. And, you know, and the Shoals, you know, I mean, Muscle Shoals about 2 hours north of where I live. So, and the Shoals now, you know, obviously they're cranking it out with Isbell and John Paul White, who's a good friend of mine. And, Shakes and St. Paul and the Broken Bones, and there's so many bands that are coming out of Alabama that are doing really well, but I think they all have that, you know, they just have that thing. You know, I think Jason Isbell is a great example. You know, he's got a great song. He's by far one of the best lyricists of our time, and that's hands down. You know, I would argue anybody to the death about that, but he's also got a musical sensibility about him. He's a great guitar player, and he's also a great songwriter, great singer, you know. So you can't I'm not allowed to cuss, I assume, on this format, so
you're allowed to.
Well, you can't fuck with Jason Isbell. Just say that. You can bleep it out if you want to. But, you know, you can't. You know, there's a guy like that. He's the Tyrannosaurus Rex of our generation. You know, there's nobody that can touch him.
Yeah.
You know? So for me, you know, growing up in Birmingham and being an Alabamian, you know, it's just somebody, you can't help but get touched by the culture, and especially the Southern culture of it, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, and also too, just like with your album Recoil and the inspiration that you had for that, just like how Jason had all his demons that he pours into his music, you know, you were able to kind of pour it, you know, kind of allows you to go, oh, this guy could do it. I could do it as well then too.
Yeah, absolutely. No, Jason was a, you know, huge inspiration and sort of a, you know, Jason laid the groundwork for so many people. You know, when he was in the Truckers, you know, it was a little different story. Because he was, you know, super young and learning his way through and sort of paying his dues. And I've done that, you know, my whole life. I think Jason's only 3 or 4 years older than me. But I really appreciate the work that he's done and just, you know, being an artist, mm-hmm. you know, somebody who takes the craft seriously. Because for me, you know, it's not just putting a bunch of chords together and throwing out a few lyrics here and there. It's something you pine over, and it's something that you can't help, you know, and you have to find every word. You know, and you have to refine every word. And I feel like with this record, Recoil, you know, I was able to really, shape them with a fine-tooth comb, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you have plans to hit the road in 2017?
Yeah, I'll be out mid-January, up the East Coast, Midwest, February, same thing, and then March, I think I'm going out in the UK. We haven't announced it yet, but I'll announce it now.
Exactly.
So, you know, it'll be my first UK run, so it'll be fun.
Awesome. Great. Cool. So you said, you're an Alabama fan, not Auburn then, right?
Yeah, well, it's funny you ask. I'm supposed to be an Auburn fan.
Okay.
My parents both graduated from Auburn.
Oh, okay.
But we kind of got raised in a, in one of those homes that's not divided. I know it sounds silly.
Yeah.
But, you know, in Alabama, you know, you're either an Auburn or Alabama fan. Yeah. There's no in between. But I was fortunate to be raised by parents who kind of respected me and also told me to be a fan of the more talented team. And Alabama is obviously the more talented team this year, and I have no loyalty, you know, because I didn't go to college for either one. I like watching the one that entertains me the most, and so Alabama, obviously, especially in the last 4 years, you can't touch them,
right?
And if I have to speak ahead of time, you know, it'll be Saban will get his 6th title this year.
It's definitely looking that way.
Yeah, I'm not real sure who can touch that team.
Right, exactly.
Ohio State, maybe. Clemson, maybe.
Right.
But I was hoping for a Michigan-Alabama game, but That's not going to happen. But I think Michigan is the most talented team behind Alabama.
Right. Yeah. So you mentioned before we started this interview that you're a little laid up the past couple months. Have you been binge watching TV at all?
You know, I haven't. I don't have TV.
Yeah.
I have Netflix.
Yeah, and sure. A
couple other things, but you know, the thing that I binge on is interviews from my heroes. Mm-hmm. You know, Motorhead and Metallica, Guns, Nirvana, Johnny Cash. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to get on YouTube. That's the beautiful thing about it. You know, is that when we were kids, we didn't have it. You know, the only thing you had was an article in Rolling Stone, and maybe a liner notes and a show. Mm-hmm. You know, if they were coming through town. Mm-hmm. Now you have so much access to it, which is good. And also kind of bad because the mystique is gone. I love mystique. I guess what made me so attracted to rock and roll as a kid. But it is fun to be able to see, you know, an interview from 1972 with Johnny Cash, you know, something you couldn't have seen, you know, 15, 20 years ago. So I appreciate being able to go down those wormholes.
Right. Yeah. Lastly, where can people find your music and your website?
Well, the website's just MatthewMayfield.com, yeah. And it's got all the vinyl, and you know, the store's got all the stuff that we've done a bunch of cool stuff lately. Everything from limited edition vinyl to t-shirts to koozies and, you know, all kinds of stuff that I never thought would be possible. But when you hear your record on vinyl and you hold it in your hands, there's something real special about that. And I'm lucky and fortunate to have three records on vinyl so far. And then Recoil is by far my favorite record. And, you know, every artist says their new record is their favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can't, you pick what you like, you know, as a fan. But I think that record is by far the most special and something that I hold nearer and dearer to my heart than anything else.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Swear.